or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Do you, or someone you love, have maybe you're a couple of years either side of graduation, or you know somebody who is, and they're, quote, entering the job market? If so, I think this segment's going to be for you here on Work with Marty Nemko. Advice for new graduates and for the people who love them. When your graduate's back living at home and should be doing a aggressive job search but isn't, what should you do, if anything? Should you give them leads? Should you write her resume for her? Should you kick her out? Should you encourage him to take any job or just a launch pad job, something that'll launch you to a career? What if he's clueless about what he's launching toward? Should she be a generalist or a specialist? And what about internships? There's that new court ruling that says that internship has to be more for the intern's benefit than the employer's, no more licking envelopes. Should internship seekers give potential employers a third degree? New graduates, what to do if you are the grad or someone who loves one? With me to address these questions is my frequent co-conspirator on the show, the Napa County Superintendent of Schools, member of the State Superintendent's Cabinet, and my wife, Dr. Barbara Nemko. Welcome, Barb.
Good morning. All and right. Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you very much. 35. Okay.
Now, that's my story.
Yeah, right. Now, you said that this time we're going to try an experiment. We've never done this before in the 24 years, but you're going to ask me questions. You say you don't like to be an interviewer or whatever, but because career counseling is my thing, that's what I do, you thought that maybe it would be fun for you to ask the questions. And then after I give an answer, you can say why I'm full of it. You can amplify. You can say nothing.
Me? Say you're full of it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Never.
Never. Okay. So fire away.
Okay, so you have this adult child, possibly living back in your house, unemployed, and the only jobs that he or she can get are jobs that have nothing to do with their college degree. So you've spent all this money sending them to college, but they have nothing. So do you encourage them to take any job, become a barista, do something that they could have done with a high school diploma, or do you encourage them to wait until they get that entry-level career job?
First, a word of reassurance. Over two-thirds of people do careers that have nothing to do with their degree. And so, you know, at least under the ostensible belief that the liberal arts is going to teach you the universals of writing, critical thinking skills, although the studies show that, unfortunately, that is not true for large percentages of the students. But it is very wise to do some thinking about, is there one career that should be your plan A, should be your plan, your focus? And then, yes, try to get a launch pad job for that, you know, because, of course, there's value in all work. I like to think that all work is sacred. But the best thing you can try for, at least as your plan A, is a launch pad. So that, for example, let's say, like so many listeners to KLW, you care about the environment. And, you know, you're not going to be a manager of a First Solar. But trying to get a job that would get you at the elbow of somebody who is in that industry, where you can learn a lot on the job, because you're not going to learn, you haven't learned in school, learn a lot about managing people, conflict resolution, the issues in the field, the technology, etc. That's the way to go.
Sure, that's the ideal. But how long do you wait? Suppose your adult college graduate has been living on your sofa for 6 months, and there is a job that will pay $10 an hour, but it isn't this ideal job you just described. At what point do you say, hey, you got to make some money here?
That's a great question. I think the first thing I would do, yes, I think 6 months, 3 months, 6 months is probably the right range until you say, okay, I'll take any job just to get out of the house and get you in the rhythm of work. Because when you're unemployed for too long, you tend to get, you know, inert, more likely to do, you know, sit and do the stereotype of, you know, watching video games and playing video games and getting stoned. So, yeah, after a few months, yes. But before we get to that point, I think it's really important. Most people don't realize that 3 months of job searching does not mean 3 months of job searching. One person in 3 months can can answer hundreds of ads, do incredible amounts of networking, lots of cold contact, and others could do one or two inquiries a week and think that's a job search. So before we give up on the launchpad job and a career and just take a barista job, I think it's really smart to say, okay, you know, when you're going to get hired, you're going to be expected to work 30 or 40 hours a week at least. So I want you to put at least, and that's working for the man. And if you're working, when you're looking for a job, you're working for you. I want you to put in at least 20 or 30 hours a week. You're knee-to-knee with as many people as you can who could potentially hire you, give you leads. You are LinkedIn connecting. You are learning more about the specifics of the field. You are attending conferences. You're attending the local chapter meetings of the associations. That is what a job search looks like, period.
Okay, but that's fine if your kid knows what it is that he wants to do. He's convinced it's the environment. He's convinced it's something to do with animals. What if your adult child, who's now graduated with the 4-year liberal arts degree, is still clueless and has no idea what he wants to do?
Yeah, of course, even being in the environment is not specific enough. There's 10,000 jobs in the environment, everything from administrative assistant to engineer to businessman to new business development, new business woman as well. So even that's not specific enough. But if you are like the millions and millions of people, not just when they've just graduated college, but they're 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, who are not sure, here are some of the things. I'm going to actually give you 6 steps to really quickly and yet very effectively choosing a career. Number one, I wrote an article called 25 Great Careers for 2013 and Beyond. Just Google that, 25 Great Careers for 2013 and Beyond. Scan those. They're great, not just for the money, but I weighted them on a multivariate scale, on everything from social reward to lack of toxics to good job market, money, etc. And so looking at that is sometimes a real quick way to find, and I have little profile dossiers on all those 25. In addition, if you want to go the other route, that's coming like organically, picking out a career that organically feels right. If you'd rather go the other way and you'd rather start by identifying your skills, the U.S. Department of Labor has a great tool called the Skills Profiler, and its website is... No, I'll just Google that. The Department of Labor Skills Profiler. It enables you to inventory your skills, and then it spits out 5 matching careers. That's a useful thing to do. Then the next, now hopefully you've gotten a couple of prospects for careers. Well, you don't just jump on it, but it's really easy. Google is the magical tool of today's era. You take that career and you Google that word and the word careers and read articles about it and also watch videos about it. And importantly, find a book on Amazon after it passes that test. Let's say you read a couple of articles and you Google it and it still sounds intriguing. There is a bias in most of the articles and books on careers, which is they're written by cheerleaders for the career. You want to look at both sides. So look for a book that is, for example, 30 teachers talk about what it's like to be a teacher. Or this fabulous book, there was a guest on my show just a couple of weeks ago called Should You Really Be a Lawyer? It presents both sides. So I think that if you just do that, do nothing more than that, even if you don't job shadow. And I'm not a big fan of job shadowing because that's one person. You watch one person doing the job and it's not representative. If you simply did what I just said, if you simply looked at my 25 best careers 2013 beyond, you went and used the skills profiler, you did a little Googling, you read perhaps one book that presents both sides of the career, you would have done a better job of choosing a career than 95% of people. The problem is that most young people are not willing to do even that. Many of them are. The ones that are already have jobs. They've already been given 3 job offers before they left college. So that's where the parent role comes in. I do think, while ideally we would love our kids to be self-sufficient and do it all themselves, they could be 20, 23, 25, and especially, frankly, if they've grown up in very tolerant households and they have not been intrinsically motivated, it is just too easy for them to say, oh, man, the job market sucks. So that's where I think the parent needs to be the loving taskmaster.
Yes. Yeah, so there is the entitled generation that thinks they should start as the CEO of whatever company.
It's wrong to overgeneralize. There are those who are entitled. There are those who are lazy. There are some who are scared. They hear all the reports about how many that the report that indeed came out of the Department of Labor that 53.6% of all bachelor's degree holders are doing jobs they could have gotten out of high school. That's cleaning toilets. That's scooping ice cream. And so they're scared and they say, oh, my God. And so they just want to extend their childhood. And they say, you know what? Maybe with maybe, I know this is magical thinking, but maybe the economy will turn around really and really not be a job-free recovery. Maybe I should go back to school for another degree and maybe things will turn around. But it's so there's many reasons why people don't act, but I really do think, and again, because I'm a career counselor, it's not surprising, I do believe work is both the ultimate healer and the ultimate way to live the life well led. So yes, really working hard to find out what you want to do in those first couple of months and having a parent help if necessary, and then ideally looking for a launchpad job 30 hours a week, or if necessary, yes, taking any job to at least get in the rhythm of working, because even if you are working as a barista at Starbucks, you are learning a lot about teamwork in the real world. You're learning about real people, not in the rarefied atmospheres of colleges. You're dealing with customer service. You come to realize that even sweeping the floors is, as crazy as it sounds, it is sacred. It needs to be done. It gets no status, and yet is worthy. It makes you infinitely more worthy than watching a video game.
So what do you think about the idea of volunteering in the career area that you think you want to be in? Because a lot of companies don't have formal internship programs, and especially now with the new ruling, they're going to be afraid to do it. But I'm thinking, if I thought maybe I wanted to go into education, it would be fairly easy for me to get a volunteer position in a school and do whatever I wanted to do, 10 hours, 20 hours, yeah, and then see what it's really like.
Yeah. I wouldn't call it plan A. If I couldn't get a job, I would make volunteering or an internship plan B. And I would first I'd make plan B the internship and plan C the volunteering. And here is why. Internships, at least if they're done well, are really supposed to be carefully structured programs that are designed to help the intern grow. It's not supposed to be cheap slave labor for the boss and having the intern lick envelopes. Now, there's been a lot of abuse of that by companies, and they do it, including nonprofits and universities, who, ironically, they're so hypocritical. They talk about proclaiming the value of the worker, and yet they, to evade the minimum wage law, they hire all these, quote, interns and volunteers and all those. Yeah. Anyway, so but there is a new ruling that just came down that says that indeed employers must make their internships for the primary benefit of the intern, not as labor. Otherwise, they've got to pay them. So try to get an internship. Ask those great questions like, tell me a little bit about what my typical day would be like. What would I be learning? Who would I be supervising? How much feedback would I be getting? What percentage of people who are interns end up getting hired? Those are appropriate questions. Young people tend to be either they are too full of themselves and they ask too many questions, or they're too insecure to ask them. The sweet spot is asking a reasonable number of those questions. And if you just do a lazy job internship or job search and you only get one opportunity for an internship, you're stuck. You have no choices. But putting in that 20 or 30 hours a week looking for a job or an internship will give you the likelihood of having more than one opportunity, at least for an internship. And that way, you can ask those questions to multiple employers. And the one that gives you the best deal, not only in terms of the answers to the questions, but where maybe it's a company or a nonprofit you would desperately love to work for, or it's a skill you're trying to acquire. Maybe it's this very expensive software you'd love to learn, like AutoCAD, that you just can't afford, but you'll get a chance to use that in the internship. You can weigh all that and pick the internship that for you would be the best launchpad.
Right, but that's kind of why I like volunteering if you can't get the internship.
Absolutely.
Because I'm thinking when we have volunteers in the schools, they're never making coffee or licking envelopes. They are working with kids, usually with at-risk kids. They're tutoring, they're mentoring, and that gives you much more of a picture of what being a teacher is like, because usually you're in the classroom with the teacher at that time. And you can choose how many hours you want to do. So if you were willing to give an hour or two a day, that still gives you total time to do your job search, and yet you're getting experience. Plus, some teacher falls in love with you and thinks you're the greatest thing ever. They're going to try and get you a job as a school aide and encourage you to go back and get a credential. And it seems like a good way into a profession.
All of those things are true. The reason I prefer the internships, because good internships, and there are many good internships, are more structured and planned to maximize that. It doesn't have to be created from whole cloth as it would be in a volunteer experience. As I said, first choice should be a launchpad job. Second choice should be a launchpad internship. Third choice should be a launchpad volunteer. And fourth should be any job.
Okay. So
Let's let our listeners know what you're listening to. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. We are dealing with the ubiquitous problem in what I really do believe is a permanently, structurally problemed economy, where there really aren't enough jobs for college graduates. We just have a tremendous oversupply. And so what in the world do you do if you are that person who is the new college graduate, or you are the parent or other relative or romantic partner of some of that person? What can you do? What are the guerrilla tactics, the no-nonsense tactics to help you prevail? These are not solutions for the societal problem. The societal problem of having the costing way too much to hire an American, it is just bizarre how much cost, dollar costs and stress costs it takes to hire American, and that's why we are having a jobless, quote, recovery. So that problem is beyond the scope of this current discussion. So although sometimes on this show I do like to talk about the macro, right now we are talking about tactics how to help you or someone you love survive in an extremely difficult situation.
So I'm thinking that particularly if you're the romantic partner, if you are both the parents of the child who's come to live at home, it's both your kid. But if you're the romantic partner and here is this other person's adult child living in your house, you're probably not too happy. And maybe you have lots of connections. Should you try to get leads for this kid?
Yeah, I want to answer that question, but I think it's also a good time for me to invite people to call into the show. So if you are listening to this and you or someone you love is struggling, is a relatively new college graduate, say, we've just a whole crop of 2 million people have just graduated college in the last month. If you or someone you love is one of them, or even if you're two sides, either side of graduation, whether it be high school graduation and decided not to go to college, or college graduation, or even graduate school graduation, and you would like some advice from Barbara and me on what you should do instead of this generic advice I'm giving, I'd be happy to provide customized advice with what I call a 3-minute workover. The phone number here will work with Marty Nemco here at KALW 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And before I did that, you had asked me how much help should you give? A lot of parents do have leads. Absolutely. It is not at all untoward. Certainly, in an ideal world, if you've got a very self-efficacious kid and the kid is able to create his own leads, that's more empowering. Anytime you help anybody else, it is on some level disempowering. But the advantages of doing that in general I feel like the risk-reward ratio, the cost-benefit of that is very good. So if I'm a parent of a kid and my kid is not able to get great job leads in this tough job market, really the best jobs for new graduates come from people who know people. And if indeed, and parents, because you've been on this earth longer, you know many more people. You're probably more successful people in the power to hire you. So I absolutely would give job leads to the kid. The question is, how much should you do? Should you call in advance on behalf of your kid and say, hey, would you mind giving my kid an informational interview or even a real substantive job interview? Should you have your kid do it? No, one size does not fit all. It depends on your kid. The goal should be to try to give your kid as much autonomy as possible, because I really do not think that kids end up being better off, or adults, by being dependent. The more independent, the more self-efficacious you can make them, the better. But it's also, you can't have a hard and fast rule. Not all people are self-efficacious or the same amount of self-efficacy. You've got to take a nuanced approach and vary it with your child.
So let me go back to this notion. You were talking about the structure of the economy.
Yeah.
And it occurs to me that certainly in the education profession, what we're looking at right now is a huge wave of baby boomer teachers who are going to be retiring in the next few years. So although for the last couple of years we've been laying off teachers and furloughing them and making it a very insecure profession to go into, once all those folks start retiring, there is going to be a difference in the job market, and that's going to go across all spectrums.
Great. Not all spectrums. There are many, many fields that are automated and can be offshored, but teaching is a perfect example of one that is not going to be offshored. And as much as we're going to automate, there is going to be video teaching without question, dream team teachers teaching classes. Still, because it's such a heavily unionized field, they will protect jobs as much as possible. And yes, whether it be school psychologists or teachers or nurses, especially with Obamacare, 51 million more people covered under Obamacare, there will be a need for more nurses. They're not currently, as in education, has been laying off of nurses. But longer term, I absolutely do think that those non-offshoreable, people-centric jobs like teaching that are government, we are seeing that there's no question that the percentage of GDP – that is government jobs is increasing. Do not just mindlessly accept what our politicians are trying to tell us. We're really tightening the belts. We're cutting. And in reality, I'm just looking at the Bay Area statistics for the job market, and there were 8,000 government jobs net added in this last month alone. So, because for whatever reasons, again, it's beyond the scope of this particular show, we are making a decision that America is better with a larger government, and willingness to increase the debt, I encourage you to consider government jobs, especially in fields where it is impossible to offshore, like teaching, in nursing, in public institutions like veterans hospitals, VA hospitals, and Kaiser Permanente, which the Obama administration has written specifically to make Kaiser the big winner in healthcare reform. That's where, in my mind, the jobs will be.
Okay. So now you have this kid who's been living on your couch after graduating from college for a couple of months, and it's not unusual for them to start to get depressed.
Right.
Because maybe whether they've been trying or not, if they're the efficacious person and they've been running around trying to get a job and they still can't get a job, or they're the kid who is a little more lazy and hasn't been doing it and now is beginning to feel really bad about him or herself, what do you do with this depressed kid?
Yeah. Conventional wisdom is that there's a difference between what are called constitutionally depressed people and situationally depressed people. That is, there are those people who usually it starts in as early as five years old, more typically in teenage years, where the kid is just always kind of starts out as a depressed person, and environmental issues, like some bad things happen to them, exacerbates it. There are others who traditionally have been called situationally depressed who are not depressed by nature. But then, of course, it's understandable that if after 3 or 6 months you're not getting a job, you're going to be depressed. But I actually think those are false distinctions, because I think that the treatment, unless it's really severe, is the same. Certainly for severe depression, it requires generally medication, other kind of physiological interventions like deep brain stimulation. But let's put that aside for now. Let's talk about your garden variety depressed kid or adult. I think of a three-legged stool of solutions to that problem. Number one is hope. Hope is the greatest antidote to depression. So if, in fact, you have not gotten a job and you've not gotten job leads, taking a fresh look at what your job target has been, how you've gone after it, what's been your tactics, what's been your approach, what does your resume look like, how are you describing how are you doing your 30-second elevator pitch, can give new hope.
Who do you do that with?
I normally, it's ironic in that I'm a career counselor, but I like to think that the first line of defense should not be a career counselor at all. It should be somebody you respect and love, you, whether it is a family member like a parent, whether it is a former coworker, whether it is a best friend, if possible. Because I do think in some ways there just really are, I think career counselors in some sense, because they do it all day, every day, they tend to fall into kind of cliched, stereotypical reactions. They've kind of developed habits and don't do enough to really judge the individual. So, yes, there is room for career counselors, but I think that the first line of defense is someone who really knows you and cares about you as an individual.
Right. I'm just thinking the dynamic between the parent and the kid
depends.
Who's been living home on the sofa for 6 months could be problematic.
Absolutely. It depends. No, one size does not fit all. But before I ran to the career counselor, forgetting about the money, I think I would try, whether it be a respected family friend, maybe it's not the parent, but maybe one of your parents' friends is this brilliant, kind, ethical, successful person who is very insightful.
Or even a grandparent, because we all know that grandparents think you walk on water no matter what, and many of them have lots of experience, may have contacts and leads, and may have been very successful.
Always interested in presenting the other side. You don't want somebody who's a cheerleader necessarily.
If I'm depressed, I want a cheerleader.
Yes. The wise mentor, though, that's like a short-term feel-good too often and a long-term depressive. Let's say you're depressed and you've got this grandmother who thinks you're the greatest thing in the world. First of all, you're probably not going to believe it because you're thinking she's just being a grandmother, and you see what the world for 6 months has given you crap, and she's saying you're God. That doesn't quite work. Also, really often the best help is someone who praises when it's appropriate and is critical when it's appropriate. Grandmothers are not so good at providing that balance.
I don't know. I think back to my Aunt B telling me I was beautiful when I was the funniest looking kid you ever saw. That was, I didn't quite believe her, but it sure gave me hope.
Yeah, and that didn't hurt. But that wasn't
that,
that was not going to engender complacency. But if somebody has been not landing, if a 20-something is not landing a job and has been kind of hanging out and making a few inquiries and has, you know, inflated sense that, you know,
oh, he
or
needs
she
a kick
wants
in the butt.
Yeah,
that,
well, that's why I'm
that
saying that
needs.
too often. Unbridled praise is a short-term feel-good and a long-term detriment. Anyway, let me give out the phone number again. Either we're so fascinating you don't want to call and just want to listen to us, or we're boring the pants off of you. But if you are, we are Barbara and Marty Nemco, and we are talking about advice for new graduates, for people 2 years either side of graduation, whether it be high school, college, or graduate school, and you're stuck. You are unemployed or deeply underemployed. You're one of the 53.6% of college graduates under 25 who are doing jobs they could have gotten out of high school. You're literally and metaphorically cleaning toilets. We usually can give you some help with what I call a 3-minute workover. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134.
Actually, I have another reason to call. You may have been one of those people who was in that situation, or you're the parent of somebody who was in that situation, and now you are no longer in that because you've successfully done something. Parents, we'd love to hear from you. How did you intervene? Kid, what did you do? What helped you? What motivated you to really go out and get that job? That would be as useful as calling in for help and advice.
Totally agree.
Please give us a call, 415-841-4134.
Okay.
And we have some callers on the line.
They're getting put on the...
Well, okay, so while they're being screened, my question would be, at what point, parent, do you have to say to the kid, you know what, you've been living here, and I've been doing your laundry, and we've been paying for your food, and there's got to be a limit to this. So you got 6 weeks, 6 months. How do you actually get them out of the house?
Because that is such a touchy topic. I think I would say that in a more loving way. I would probably do it something like this. Yes, if I felt like that I was enabling them. It is kind of like the welfare mentality or the trust fund baby mentality. If I am paying for my kid's room, board, and partying, there is a disincentive for those who are not intrinsically motivated to sit on their butts. So I would say something like the following to my kid. After, I'd say, you know, I love you forever. You're so important to me and everything, but I'm wondering if I'm doing you more harm than good by allowing you to live here and paying your rent. It just takes away a lot of the incentive to be on your own. I'm always here for you, but let's agree on a date. I don't know if it's going to be a month from now or 2 months from now. Let's pick a date, circle it on our calendar. And by then, if you've not landed a job that's going to enable you to be self-supporting, we're going to kick you out.
But where will I go, Mom, Dad? You want me on the street?
Yeah, well, you know what? If that's how... Hopefully this is going to motivate you to work harder to land a job. But if you don't, you know what? I'm wondering if in the larger arc of things, even if you were on the street in a homeless shelter, whether that ultimately...
I can't believe you're going to send me to a homeless shelter.
You know, I hope and pray it doesn't get to that. But I think I'm seeing... You've been here now 6 months living after college and doing not really a whole lot. And I feel like I'm enabling that. I think that the path out is I'm not kicking you out tomorrow. We're going to agree together on a date. And the fear of being homeless or in a homeless shelter hopefully will then fuel you. That's my most loving thing that I can propose. Am I sure I'm right, dear son or dear daughter? No. But that is my best shot.
So what I heard in there is, yeah, this is the kid who's been sitting around on the sofa and not doing too much. What if you have a very motivated kid who really has been pounding the pavement?
I wouldn't kick him out. No,
okay.
That's different. Because then the kid is doing his part, and the economy, as I said, is terrible. And let's say he's not that bright, or he's not that winsome, or whatever. He majored in, you know, in art history or American studies, and he's got a 2.1 GPA from San Jose State. You know, and employers are yawning at his applications. I'm not kicking my son out. No. Or daughter, of course. No,
okay.
You know what then I would do? If the world is telling him that, you know, he's tried a plan A, a plan B, a plan C, different careers, and nobody seems to want him, and really there's a lot of people like that, I would probably try to teach him or her the art of self-employment and start a simple business. And I'd work with him, whatever I needed to do. Like, for example, I gave a talk at an association for people with Asperger's syndrome and their families. And they're not hireable. Many of them, they admit 90% of them are not hireable. I begged them. I said, certainly, you know, I know you want your freedom too. You're entitled to a life. But at some point, it may be worth making the commitment, and it's a very intimate decision as to whether you want to do it or not, to try to work with your child, be his partner in starting a simple business. He or she will learn so much about simply about being in the world and being successful, and maybe it'll even be a successful business. So that would be the approach I would take with somebody for the millions of people in America who simply are not employers are not even willing to pay them the minimum wage, let alone the proposed increased minimum wage, let alone pay for Obamacare, disability, you know, wrongful termination suits, all that. So there's millions and millions of people who simply have zero net dollar value in America's employers' eyes.
So if someone has such a limited set of skills and abilities, what kind of simple business can you start with them?
I love the example of shoeshine businesses. There's nothing anybody with an 80 IQ could give a shoeshine. Shoeshines cost $7. They cost nothing to produce. You don't need a storefront. You need a little stand that a fellow carpenter could build for next to nothing. I know somebody, when I was leaving Oakland Airport, and there was this guy who's a shoeshine guy. He makes a six-figure income doing shoeshines. And so that's a relatively simple business. He probably still, if he's really not efficacious, he probably still needs some support and help. That's why I'd be his partner. But whether it be a shoeshine stand or a flower stand or selling burritos out of a cart or soaps, you know, French soaps, imported French soaps. I was amazed. There's a place that sells French soaps. They sell them for $10 a bar. The guy who owns it tells me he imports them from France. It costs him 50 cents. It costs him 50 cents. He sells them for $10. Cocaine doesn't have that high a profit margin.
Wow. Well, there's a business. All right, we got a bunch of people on the line.
I'll give out the phone number again, and then we'll go to the phones. So if you or someone you love is stuck as a relatively new graduate and looking for some new directions, new insight, practicalities, we invite you to call Work with Marty Nemco for what I call a three-minute workover. The phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And let's go to the phones. It is your turn on the air. Welcome. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. So you asked people to call in, and you went on and on and on about something that was completely unrelated to the question that you asked. But nonetheless, here I am. I am a parent of a child who has graduated. And he is extremely motivated to find a job. And he's working day and night to do so. He's working part-time. He's enrolled in a professional program, and he is networking and going to meetings and conferences and fraternity meetings and doing everything, shaking all the trees. He is not at all like anybody you describe. So I really wish you would refrain from making up these hypothetical people who don't exist and are completely irrelevant to the people that I know. And I know a lot of these kids because I was a high school English teacher. So, you know, I just wonder, like, who are these people that you're talking about?
I'm going to thank you for the call. First of all, the reason I went and talked about the macro problem about what to do was because, first of all, the calls were not coming in, and macro issues are as important as micro issues. Secondly, these actual stories of people, I've been a career counselor to over 4,000 clients. I'm glad you've been an English teacher, and you have a son who's tried very hard, and I'm sure that's very frustrating for you, and I can understand you wanting to vent your frustration on me. But unfortunately, having had 4,000 clients, and especially since in the last 5 years, the situation has gotten much worse. There really are many people who fit all the different categories. As we said, people who try very hard and can't get a job, like your son, but apparently you didn't hear that part, as well as people who are not trying at all. So I'm sorry you're unhappy. Let's go back to the phones.
Well, I would be curious if the caller is still on the line, what field her son is trying so hard to get a job in.
For once, I just felt like all she wanted to do was bash me, and so I just didn't really feel like I wanted to help her anymore.
If you'd like to make a call.
She's gone anyway. She didn't want help. She just wanted to vent. She was not asking for help. She wanted to tell me that I didn't get her son. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your and Barbara Nemco. Of course, it's your turn on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Hi. So I just had a story sort of two parents. When I graduated from Davis about 2 years ago, I was a master I had just graduated with a degree in political science, and I'd worked on campaigns. I'd never been paid. But when I graduated, I was sort of left with not really sure what I wanted to do. But my parents were very supportive in saying, you know, you can stay here for a couple months. I interned, I volunteered. And one of my parents said, so she had had kids from a previous marriage and had given them 3 months to find a job before, you know, essentially what you had said, you know, well, you're out of here. But that was 15 years ago, so that didn't really apply to me. Also, they had a different career. It was a different time. So I felt the pressure. But I had another set of parents who really helped me and just said, look, you know, we're supporting you. Do what you have to do. Other set of I had another friend who graduated from Chico State with a degree in history, and his parents were very strict in the sense that they gave him 4 months to try to find a job and what he wanted to do. And he was incredibly passionate. He wanted to be in this, he wanted to work at a museum. He wanted to be a historian. He wanted to do all this. And maybe that was unrealistic, but still, I mean, that story that you said about giving, you know, somebody 3 months or, you know, 6 months or whatever, it really depends on the kid. And, you know, my friend, he was sort of forced.
That's exactly what I said.
Another kind of job.
Yeah, I'm going to interrupt you because I just want to make sure that we get to all the callers. Yes, absolutely. I'm glad you're reaffirming the point that we did make earlier, that it depends on the kid. But now, what I've seen many times is that indeed many people who want to get into the world of politics do what you did. They worked as a volunteer intern at the you know, whether the field office, the main office of a politician. And again, even the politicians who talk about the importance of labor, they use all kinds of volunteers to avoid the minimum wage law, and then they give a very small percentage of them jobs. What happened to you?
So I was very lucky where I started volunteering on a campaign. The candidate won, and now I'm working in his office. But my point is that it really depends on the kid. It depends on the field as well.
Yep.
So I would really caution on telling that story of, you know, well, 3 months or you're out of here, because it's on an individual basis. And I'm sure you're very good at what you do, obviously. I doubt you'd be on the radio if you wouldn't. But I'm just saying, it really, it's almost household to household, I feel, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, I thank you for the call, because that is exactly,
I think that's exactly what we said.
Sorry, it wasn't clear enough. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. It's your turn on the air.
You know, Marty, I just wish you didn't always have to be right. You know, do you all, I mean, don't you close with some line about learning from people who disagree with you?
I don't know why today people have decided it's bash Marty Nemko.
You know, I'll thank you for the call as well. You know, those of you who listen to the show know that when there's an idea that I disagree with, that is not what I said, but is a better idea, I say great idea. But I can't just agree with different positions when they are wrong or precisely the opposite of, you know, they said what I said. Anyway, let's go back to let me give out the phone number again. If you would like, you're welcome to bash me if you like. We don't screen calls. We actually take all calls in the order received, the ultimate in democratic egalitarian radio. So you can call in to criticize me and you will be heard without interruption. Maybe if it gets redundant, I'll stop you. But if you have a problem with you, your kid or someone you love, or yourself as a recent graduate and would like some advice, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko, 415-841-4134. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. Hi. It's you.
It's me?
Yes, it is.
Okay, great. Well, let's see. I'm a returning student. I went to school. I went back to school. I'm 53 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I got an AA in music.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to stay in school and get higher education, but I'm not sure that I can afford to. I've been on with the Pell Grant. I pretty much used up my Pell Grant almost. I could borrow money, but at this late stage in the game, I don't really want to get super in debt and become like a music therapist from a fancy school because, hey, you know, I'm 53 years old. So I've been babysitting And I was thinking of breaking into the world of part-time tutoring now that I'm better than a high school graduate. And I was wondering if you have any input.
Well, I can certainly be optimistic about one area. Certainly, there's no question that tutoring, especially for special needs kids, especially with the explosion of kids with the Asperger's on the Asperger's or the autism spectrum, parents are desperate, and they try to get what they can from the public schools, but it's a 24/7 problem, and it's a terribly difficult problem. And as somebody, I love music. I find music the ultimate therapy, the ultimate antidepressant. And I'm just wondering whether you could combine your love of music with your ability to tutor. You said you, apart from the music, you had interest in tutoring. I think that triad of special needs kids, especially spectrum disorders, and music and tutoring might be the interface. Unfortunately, again, in an era of degree proliferation, an AA in music is not, you know, necessarily going to make you extraordinarily employable. And, you know, if you're independently wealthy and you can afford to go to school because it's fun and you like that, fine. But you twice mentioned that you didn't want to go into further debt. So my first take would be to look into the world of special needs tutoring and incorporate your music into it. One more little point about that. As I said, I love music. And even as a career counselor, because I love music so much and I play the piano, I find a way to incorporate my piano playing even into my career counseling, which would seem absurd. But for example, sometimes we'll take a 2-minute break in the middle of a 2-hour session and I'll play something for the client if she wants. Or I will sometimes... I've developed a hand condition, so I can only play with 7 fingers now. And sometimes it's inspiring for people to see that I can play with 7 fingers and it's, that we all deal with setbacks. So, you know, incorporating who you are, the personal attributes of who you are, even in an ostensibly not relevant to a not relevant career can be helpful. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
All right, thank you very much.
Because you learned that stuff from music, music. It can help learning.
Yep.
All right, thank you.
Okay, you take care. Should we go back to the phones? Or you want to ask
sure.
me some questions?
No, let's go back to the phones.
Back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. What's on your mind? It's your turn.
Is that you,
it
Dr.
is.
Nemko?
It is.
Hi. Oh, I'm so glad I reached you. And your wife is just lovely and
she
as
is.
Articulate as you are.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Barbara. I met you at a recent speech and in the city, and I told you you were brilliant right when I started, and you really, really helped me. My mom has said there's only one man that gets it. You need to listen to Marty Nemko years ago, and I didn't. But alas, you really helped me, and not only me, but my boyfriend get more realistic. And I heard the callers who were criticizing, and I am so proud of you for being so direct and stating your opinion, which is something many of us, especially in the Bay Area where you've got to be PC and join New Agey stuff, don't do. So it's very caring and honest of you to say what you really think. And you and I had a difference about how to mourn losses, to make career moves, and it hardly matters. You might be right. I might be right. Each of us are very different. You are a wonderful dad who is an incredible survivor, had his way of coping, and maybe mine's different, but I left walking on air that you were as dazzling as my mom always said. So I just want to reiterate that, and, you know, when people disagree with me, I'm not offended. I don't care. I think I'm right. So at any rate, thank you so much, Dr. Nemko, and I'm going to go to your next lecture.
That's very kind of you. I might be useful for our listeners to share that what we are disagreeing because it's very interesting. Again, one size does not fit all.
Oh, no.
I have learned over the years that there's a certain number of people who feel the need to grieve a job loss, and so that they will process the job loss, they will join a group, they will complain, they'll have pity parties, they will whatever, and they do need to process. But I found that many more, the more they process, the more inert and the more the negative feelings about their past boss stay top of mind, and they're less likely to move forward. So absolutely one size doesn't fit all, but I certainly do encourage a caution to anybody who feels the need to do too much processing over a job loss. Is that a fair way to describe the discussion?
Absolutely, and I was deeply moved by your father's situation, and I told you about the grandchildren of Holocaust survivors that I knew at Menninger's, and how, you know, I hate to say it, they were really badly off, and apparently their parents never discussed the Holocaust, as your dad didn't, with you, and rightly so. We didn't want to give another minute, as you said, to that horror. But then I said, I saw these people, and I myself grieved a very long time, perhaps even 40 years of my life, but I sometimes think trauma can be so extreme, as it was in my case, that you take as long as you need to, and there's no right or wrong, and everybody's different. But boy, I sure thought about what you said, and I thought, if only, Leah, you could have ceased the grieving about the past, you would have added so many more years, especially in light of my cancer. And I just can't thank you enough. I'm taking into consideration what you said, and I also did it the way I could at the time in the 70s and 80s when people were so unsophisticated about trauma. So I hear you, and you might be right, and it makes me sad, but I also know that it's fine that that was my way.
Well, and I certainly hope that you have success in dealing with that miserable cancer. You mentioned it in passing,
oh,
but certainly your thoughts, I will be thinking of you and wishing you all the best with that, of course.
Oh, thank you, Marty.
And thank you for that lovely call.
Yes, thank you. It was
Barbara,
very nice of you.
Thank you. It's wonderful to meet you. You two fit each other very well.
We've been together 40 years.
So it's a good thing.
Yeah, I do love her very much. Yep.
Okay, well, anyway. Marty, I'll see you soon.
Very good. Thanks very much for the call.
Bye-bye.
Should we go to the phones? You have something
Absolutely.
To say?
Absolutely. That was such a nice call.
That
Maybe
nice.
There'll be another nice one.
Yeah, well, I love the idea that we don't have call screeners. We take them as they come in so the listeners hear whatever it is listeners have to say.
And we're as surprised as the listeners.
All right. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. It's your turn on the air.
Hi, Marty.
Hi.
Let me turn off my radio here.
Thank you.
I think about three callers are really incensed and think that they could have done a lot better by asking, Marty, are you saying that all the young folks who aren't finding jobs fit the stereotype?
No.
Then you would have said, no, here's what I said. Because what I did hear you say is now, in some situations, kids are really motivated and trying really
yep.
hard to find a job. And in some situations, I would not put them out of the house. And I think those three callers didn't hear that. But
right.
the thing is, the way that they talked with you was not respectful. And some of them were actually pretty rude about it. And I think that was really unnecessary.
Thank you.
Because if they really heard what you said and listen to you more often, they'd get the fuller picture.
I think they're trying to be more sensitive to, you know, people are so, especially the first woman who called, she loves her son very much. Her son sounded like he was capable and has worked his butt off. And yes, as for the reasons we pointed out, it is very difficult for even very good, hardworking folks to find decent work in this economy. And so, but she just took the frustration out on me. Anyway, I don't want to talk about that because that's not serving anybody. But I thank you for the kind call. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, my name is Mary.
Hi, Mary.
And this is the first time I've listened to your program. I've been enjoying it.
Thank you.
I was wondering what sort of advice you would have for somebody who wanted to be entrepreneurial.
Could you turn down your radio first, though, because it's echoing.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Mary.
Okay, sorry about that. I thought I did that.
Yeah.
Somebody who wanted to be more interested in self-employment.
Mm-hmm.
And what advice you might have for somebody in terms of the skill sets that they would need to make that happen.
Okay, great. Yeah. We talked about it a little earlier, but I'd like to tell you, I'm going to give you, I guess, there were probably four or five questions I would ask you. Some people really are meant to be self-employed and others are not. To what extent, and you can answer these, to what extent really are you a self-starter? Do you need the structure of a boss or the hierarchy or the rules, the IT department? How much are you self-contained and a self-starter?
That depends on my mood on any given day, honestly.
But that's not good for self-employment because every day you're not being productive is a day you're not making any money, unlike when you've got a salary job where you're getting paid all the time. Second, There is an infinite number of problems that come up in work, dealing with a customer, dealing with a supply problem, dealing with a weather problem, dealing with a theft, dealing with insurance issues. Are you good at normally quickly on your own without having to hire somebody? Are you good at solving the kind of practicalities of life like that?
Those sorts of things, yes.
Okay, good. Are you a good salesperson? Because no matter what business you're in, if you're an entrepreneur, you're selling your product or service. Do some people have the natural ability to just get people to like them? My wife, is Barbara, is exactly one of them. She's the incoming president of Rotary Napa. And she only talked for 30 seconds, but she just lit up the room. And everybody would, I'm sure, will want to volunteer to help her make Rotary great this year. I don't have that skill. That's not who I am. Do you have the ability to sell literally and figuratively?
If I believe in it, yes.
Okay. And do you know what kind of business you'd start? And, of course, ideally it would be something you'd believe in.
Yes.
Okay. Tell me about the business you'd be thinking of starting.
Okay. So I would like to start a business. I have a website. I've developed a website. It's called Life Path Memoirs. And I would like to record people's life stories.
Right.
The marketing issue has been a little bit difficult.
It's critical.
Because I'm not sure.
It's critical. I know somebody who's a very kind woman. She used to be a reporter for the, give her a plug. Her name is Francine Brevetti, and she was a writer for the Oakland Tribune and a very, very nice person. And she is working hard to write family histories, video histories, text histories, book length, short length. And I don't really know how successful she is, but I know she's been working hard at it. So, yes.
I am actually familiar with her. I've done my research.
Okay. So one thing that is absolutely true that would have been my next question is you have to not only be good at marketing, but you have to be willing to embrace it. Because especially in the early years of running your business, you will spend far more time marketing your business than doing family histories or personal histories. Are you willing to do that?
I'm willing to do it, but the ideas that come to me, I don't know are the right ones. Like I was thinking of advertising in the AARP magazine, or because, you know, generally the people that I would be working with would be a little bit older.
Yeah. Here's what I would do with regard to that. I think that may be a good idea, but before I spent the thousands and thousands of dollars it takes to place an ad there, unless it's a little classified ad, I would try to pitch a story. I would try to pitch a story on how rewarding it is to tell your personal family history. And it doesn't have to be your clients, but it could be Francine's clients or others. And that article would essentially be a great advertisement for you, because on the bottom it would say that you are a personal historian and available. And that way, instead of spending thousands of dollars, you're getting free advertising, and an article is always better than an advertisement. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's a fabulous idea. This morning, I happened to pick up a copy of Napa Valley Marketplace, which is a free publication that comes out once a month in Napa. And there was a story, an article, about two brothers, I believe, who opened up a gelato store in Napa. By the time I finished reading that article, I have to go there tomorrow, because that gelato sounded so wonderful. And that was free advertising. And I'm certainly not the only person, I think, who read that article who's going to act on it.
Good. I wish you the best. Thanks very much for the call. Let's take one more call, and then, Barbara, I have talked disproportionately in this show, much more than we normally have, and so I want to make sure you're going to I'm going to give you a little advance notice. I'm going to ask you the broad generic question at the end. If you had a son or daughter who was moderate, let's say not super efficacious or not efficacious, but right in the middle, what would you and would you not do for that child? But first, let's do that now. I'm looking at the clock; it's getting on the late side. So why don't we do that? Tell me what you you've got a 23-year-old kid who's home, who's not in the first few months. You know, she didn't land a job before she graduated, and now it's almost July. What would you do if you were the mom?
It would probably depend on where they are in the process. Is this a kid who has no clue what they want to do? And then I would be encouraging them to be looking at all the different cool new websites that they have on careers and trying to narrow down what they want, and encouraging them to set up appointments to do informational interviews, to talk to people, some people that I know who would be in that area who could answer some of their questions, invite people to dinner who might be in that particular field, and I wouldn't be sending them out trying to get them interviewed for a job. I'd be sending them out to try and get information from people that I knew. Some of those people might be willing to take it a step further and actually interview them for a position or give them an internship, but that's not what I'd be asking for. It would be unusual, I think, for anyone that I know to say, no, I won't spend 15 minutes talking to your kid about my field, my job, my career. And then something might happen from that. If it was a kid who knew what they wanted, then I would start scrolling through my Rolodex. Or is that such an outdated term?
Your iPhone address list.
Exactly. Do you know that you can put all your cards in a scanner and it just runs through and it comes up alphabetically your iPhone contact list?
It's
the most amazing thing I've ever seen. It just takes those cards in 2 seconds. Fabulous. But yeah, I would start looking at all the people that I knew in the particular area and see if we could help my child narrow down, because then you have to figure out, do you want to be a generalist or a specialist? And that's not something that we talked about during the show, but that's important. Do you want to be someone who sort of just works in that field, or do you have a particular love?
You know, I actually have an opinion about that. It really varies with the kid. If you're really brilliant and a very fast learner, you can be a generalist because you can reach a fairly high level of expertise in many things, and there are certain jobs where that's valued. But if you are a more average kid, then I think we live in a world of specialization, and you'd be wiser to try to say, I'm going to become the expert. We're talking about environmental stuff. So it'd be more like, I'm going to become the expert at importing sources, you know, importation or supply chain of solar panels. You know, developing a specific expertise is going to be your ticket to getting hired. Because if you're not brilliant and you're just a dabbler and you know a little bit about a lot of things, that's fun for party conversation, but it's not going to get you hired. It's going to vary with the person.
But that also reminds me of another thing that I would do. There's a guy in Napa, Chuck McMinn, who I admire tremendously. And he has taught himself really three different careers. He started in Silicon Valley in technology, but then when he moved to Napa, he taught himself everything there was to know about the wine industry. And then when he got involved in education, he taught himself everything there was to know about education by reading widely and really trying to learn. So if my child either wasn't sure or had some idea of where they wanted to go, I would be saying, we're not going to be playing any video games or watching television, but let's get all those articles. Let's start reading. Find out what you want to do. Learn everything you can before you go for any informational interviews so that at least you have intelligent questions to ask. You're not just sitting there saying, oh, can you tell me all about it? But you're knowing a lot of things about this particular area, because once you get that job interview, it isn't only how you answer the questions that's terribly important. It's the questions you ask.
Yeah. Well, as we know, Chuck McMinn is not an average guy. So, yes, he's
right.
The perfect example of a... Right.
It's still the idea is to really teach yourself a lot.
And that is something I believe. It seems almost anti-intellectual, but you can learn a fair amount about a topic. Let's say you did want to do supply chain for solar energy. You can learn so much so quickly with articles. Now, you don't have to go get a master's degree. I did learn how to be a professional rose breeder just by reading and watching a couple of rose breeders in action. And even though most rose breeders have PhDs, you really can learn a lot from that combination of watching informational interviews and articles.
And it's way cheaper than going back and getting another degree.
You bet. And that is all the time we have, but I'd like to give you if you had one soundbite you want to leave the audience with, I want to give you the last word regarding the issue of new graduates. Anything you want to say?
Yeah, I want to say love your kid, but don't love them to the point where you're really enfeebling them.
And that is Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and also the donors, all the people. There's a large number of people here who were generous enough to donate to KELW during my hour. As a thank you, we have invited them to come and watch the show today, and we're going to have brunch. And they heard all of the hatred of Marty Nemco, which is part
and
of the reality.
And the love.
Yeah. Anyway, so I want to thank you all. I'm going to mention their names, even though it's running late. Carol Bledsoe, Flash Gordon, Patricia Harden, Malcolm Hillen, Miriam Maxwell, Debbie Rabe, Alvin Warwis, Stefan Brethauer, Liz Noteware, Barrett Branch, Elaine Shelob, Ruth Dunham, Stefan Goodwettle, Gruna Weddle, Kevin Ho, Mark Warsawe and Renata Albrecht, his sweetie. And again, thank you very much. Next Sunday, I will talk with the Mike Cassidy. He's the Silicon Valley columnist for the Mercury News on the present and future of Silicon Valley jobs. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko for Barbara Nemko, reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.